Right. Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for being here with you. I'm going to talk. Well, I guess I'll start a little bit with a confession here, and maybe like some of you, I've had looked at this data set and said, you know what? If I present this at ASA, I'll really have an opportunity to dive in and really figure out what's going on here, because I've had a cursory review this summer of it, but I really wasn't sure what to make of it. But I'm not really sure I'm that much farther along at this point, but I'm hoping, you know, in terms of what actually this is, the implications for this. But in many ways, you know, I'm relatively new to my position, and I had the good fortune of coming in with these long-term no-till sites that are set up. And there's a lot of common themes swirling around here in terms of nutrient management and how tillage interacts with that. And so in some ways, this is a little bit of an impromptu study to address some of those. So a little bit of background here. Everybody, most folks are familiar with no-till. This is really a practice that has, in the last 20 years, has transformed a lot of grain agriculture in the Midwest and how folks are actually producing corn and beans and small grains. Maybe sometime in the late to mid-90s, adoption rates really grew rapidly across the country, and in Ohio, where I'm from in particular. And there's a lot of benefits that, you know, we could go on and talk about in terms of what no-till confers to a producer or to a producer soil. This first one, in terms of reducing time and labor, is a main driver, right? I mean, soil scientists love to talk about no-till in terms of reducing disturbance, building aggregate stability, da-da-da. But really, the adoption rates are driven by the fact that growers can farm more acres, and that's the reality. Now I will specify that a lot of tillage in the Midwest is not continuous no-till, so it might be a rotational type of tillage, and that's certainly true in Ohio. But this idea of nutrient stratification is still an issue, and this is when I say stratification, we can just define it as a non-uniform accumulation of nutrients in the surface relative to these deeper layers. This is something that happens in natural ecosystems quite commonly, and plants have certainly evolved ways to deal with this, right? I mean, it's in many ways, if we think about it, they're mining nutrients from deeper layers and bringing them up, and then residue gets deposited, and you get this sort of get out my laser pointer. Sorry, I'm the guy with the laser pointer. But you know, you can see that this phenomenon here where in the surface, the upper levels, they've got this is this idea. Maybe stratification can be defined in a picture better than in words. So in Ohio, we've got these long-term no-till soils, over 50 years of continuous no-till. So in many ways, I view this as, at least in our soils, as the most extreme example in terms of stratification. So if stratification exists, if it's an issue, then this would be maybe the place to look, okay? So stratification, you know, may or may not be important, and I'm probably not going to answer that question here today, unfortunately, but we're concerned about it because it can skew your soil test results. It can influence crop growth if roots are not able to access, the nutrients where they exist in the soil. And then maybe from a management perspective, maybe one of the most, largest implications of this is that they can confound or complicate soil test results, crop recommendations, and fertilizer predictions, or fertilizer recommendations, rather. So, but the question that, you know, everyone can acknowledge this, that this might happen, but to what degree and does it really make a difference? So broadly, our study, the objectives were to determine the degree of nutrient and organic matter stratification. And then I've got interest and have done work previously in looking at some of these active organic matter pools. And so I wanted to look at the difference between how total organic matter is stratified in these no-till soils versus some other active carbon pools. Okay, so the theory or the hypothesis would be that this total carbon might be stratified to some degree, but I would actually expect this active fraction, which is a very small percentage, maybe 5 or 10% or even less than that of the total fraction of carbon, would be even greater. The stratification would be even greater. So we've got three sites here in Ohio. I'm just going to refer to them as Clark, Wayne, and Wood. Our long-term sites were established in 62 and 64. So there's three tillages, moldboard, chisel, and no-till, and then three rotations at two of the sites, continuous corn, soybeans, and then this corn oat hay. So that dates the study a little bit, that rotation already. But the rotation is really only at the two sites. And I'll show you some rotation data here, but I don't really have very good conclusions in terms of the effects of that rotation. So just very quickly, here's, if you're interested, Clark and Wayne are silt loams, and then the Wood County site is a Hoytville clay loam, for what it's worth. So part of science is, broadly more speaking, part of life in general is learning from your mistakes, right? And so, and knowing what not to repeat, not to do again. Sampling to this level of intensity is probably something I'm not rushing out to do again. But what we did is we went and sampled essentially 2.5 centimeter inch intervals down to 12 inches. And then the good folks at Spectrum Analytics ran a standard soil test, and then we ran this permanganate oxidizable carbon. And one of the things is that we just really didn't have a lot of soil to do more with it. We were hoping to do more. We just, when you're sampling one-inch intervals, you don't get a lot of soil from that. So for folks that aren't, they don't know, or you're not familiar with what active carbon or what this, I'm the guy that's made this very nice, beautiful assay, turned it into a dirty word, pox. It's like, where's your chicken pox at or something? But I've worked with it a little bit, and I'm convinced that it's a very nice assay. But it's really, it's just, all it really entails is taking 2.5 grams of soil, you shake it for 2 minutes, you let it settle, you dilute it, and then you read it on a spectrophotometer. So it really couldn't get more simple than that in terms of the implementation of that. So previous work, we showed that this epoxy was more related to smaller and heavier in terms of density, size fractions of carbon. So these are carbon fractions that are more processed. They're typically a lower C-to-N value, high proportion of microbial biomass. And then we also found that it's sensitive to management or environmental variation. So, and this has been shown a number of times since. So just getting to results now. I'm just going to apologize for how much stuff is here, but that's just, I really struggle with how to present this. So what we have, if you bear with me, we've got depth on our y-axis. We've got our three sites in terms of these three columns. And then we've got our rotation, continuous corn soybean, and then this corn oat hay. Then within each one of these panels, we've got our three tillage treatments, moldboard in red, and then no-till in blue. And the no-till, the blue one, is really what you might want to focus on. So this is total organic matter, okay? What does it mean? And here's pox, okay? So if we just kind of flip back and forth between these, that's awesome, right? I mean, that's
it's music, man.
Yeah. So looking at the raw data didn't show me much. So what I did is what a good scientist does, I threw this into an analysis of variance. We've got four main effects here. This is our table. Everything's significant. Now, everything but one thing, which is that four-way interaction. Now, I only have about 15 of these slides, but since we're all fresh from two or three days of conferencing, I'm sure you won't mind. No, I'm just kidding. I don't have I just wanted to show you that this is kind of, you know, with all the measured parameters, we had a lot of significance. Depth interactions, site interactions. I mean, it's just hard to know what to do. This is a stratification study, or that's the idea anyways. And all I want to do is sum over depth, you know, so it doesn't make sense. But so instead, what I did is I took our two extreme treatments of mole board plowing and no-till, and I took those values for every rotation, site, depth combination, and I subtracted the two. So what we're looking at here is the difference between no-till and mole board plow with the Clark site, the Wayne site, and the Wood site, okay? And then our colors are our rotation, which doesn't seem to have a whole lot of influence. So the reality is that this line right here is our zero point, okay? So that means that if it's greater than that, the no-till was more than the mole board plow. If it's less than that, it's less than the mole board plow at depth. So, and we see this very consistent pattern emerge that might not be surprising. You know, and this is, we didn't measure roots, but if we did measure roots, we'd likely see kind of a similar pattern for that. But where we have an enriched zone of stratification in the surface and then basically a depleted zone as you move through, okay? So this top graph is pox, this lower graph is organic matter. Again, not a whole lot of difference between those two, between the, I'm using organic matter loss on ignition as a proxy for total carbon here, but if we can assume that pox is a small percentage of organic matter, then there's not a big difference in terms of those two relationships. Soil test phosphorus and potassium, we see typically a zone of enrichment and then a zone of depletion, and this is kind of similar patterns across most of the properties that we measured, okay? So does stratification matter? Well, what I did is I looked at, so in Ohio our recommendations basically say if you're in no-till, you should sample 0 to 4 inches to look for pH, but sample 0 to 8 to look for everything else, okay? So I'm not sure if that makes sense or not, but that's where it stands. And so what I did is I looked at the surface 2 inches, the surface 4 inches, and the surface 8 inches from kind of an agronomic perspective to see if this is going to influence how we think about these soils, how they might be managed. And you can see, not surprisingly, you know, this stratification that does happen, the relative magnitude between pox and organic matter doesn't seem to be too different. If we look at pH, you know, we get this same phenomenon where it's, of course, well, pHs are higher in the surface and then lower through depth, except for our wood site, which has calcareous subsoils. And then this is maybe the more important graph in terms of from a practical management, and do we need to worry about stratification? So this, you know, this shows if we look at the difference between 0 to 4 inches I'm using inches, of course, hopefully we can do that math in our head. So this is 0 to 10 centimeters, and then our recommended sampling, which is 0 to 20 centimeters. And we can just, you know, just kind of glance across and see that there are pretty large differences there, and that's really going to influence what a producer applies or doesn't apply in terms of a fertilizer recommendation rate. So to summarize, stratification happens, right? That's clear. And it's typically around that 7.5 to 10 centimeter mark, that 3 to 4 inches where that crossover point happens, okay? So we have a zone of enrichment above 10 centimeters and a zone of depletion below. This is fairly consistent across soil properties. And then the implications of this, you know, does it matter in terms of productivity? We've got, you know, plenty of yield data showing that that the no-till sites in some years yield better, some years they don't. It's, you know, it really does depend on the growing season. So Maybe one of the more interesting things in my mind is that epoxy largely tracked organic matter through the profile. They really behave the same, and this is not something that we've seen consistently. So I thought my hypothesis was generated from my experience to see that epoxy is typically a little bit more sensitive than total carbon or organic matter. So that's really all I have. So I'm happy to take questions. Thanks for your time. Will it affect the efficiency?
Yeah, you know, like the walking black, you have to retrieve the soil sometimes to get rid of the carbonate.
Right.
And this method, like, doesn't mention anything, like any pretreatment when you're working with calcareous soil.
Right, yeah, that's a great question. I don't have a good answer for you. You know, I just pulled up the data here, and it's this wood site that does have these higher pH subsoils. You know, we look at this and we can see that it doesn't appear that there's a lot of dependent, you know, contrasting to the other two sites, there's a really big difference in behavior there. I think that it's a legitimate concern if you are in a calcareous soil, but we don't have a lot of that calcareous soils in Ohio, so I don't have a good sense. Yeah.
The carbon and carbonate is already oxidized. It's already in oxidation state of +4. So,
yeah.
So it's not. So there's reason to believe that it may not have an effect.
Mm. That's a good point. Anybody else have thoughts on that? I actually haven't ever thought of that before. Yeah.
Thanks, Steve.
Yep. Thank you.
We're going to invite.